Good evening, primetime partiers. It's primetime party time. Welcome back to our hour of all things media and entertainment, live on the air at 9 p.m. at ptptshow.com and on your time, wherever you stream podcasts. Tonight, we are covering the history of Adult Swim. Let's dive into the making of one of our favorite program blocks of all time that has given us some of our most coveted shows and brought some back to life from the cancellation graveyard. How you doing, Daniel?
Ooh, I am doing well. I'm waiting for our little intro, and I think it's in it right here. Oh, hey, Tracy, how you doing? Good evening. Welcome to Primetime Party Time here on ptptshow.com, Monday nights, 9 p.m. Yes, just like you say, we're going to talk about Adult Swim tonight, pretty much everything about it, everything from histories to shows to fun little side brand thing, like basically just all that they are, all that they encompass. Yes. Everything like that. But before that, you know what we do? We do the toast. We do the roast. Tracy, what are you toasting to tonight? What are you roasting to tonight?
Or both of my toasts and roasts revolve around IKEA. So my toast is that I went to IKEA, which I had not done so since the shutdown. What's actually really like weird and cosmic is that I went and saw one of my friends right before she had her baby and she needed stuff from IKEA like as lockdown was about to be announced, like last March 15-ish time. And I went to an IKEA in like Utah, and then I went to IKEA last weekend, and I was like, full circle, you can now go to IKEA again. It is not exactly the same, and fair enough, we are, you know, living in an odd time where you have to take different constraints. But the fun part is you can still go to IKEA and get stuff in the warehouse and like look at all the showrooms, get a little bit of inspo, because my side note is that I'm in the process of moving. So if you hear any schlepping in the background, moving is occurring courtesy of friend of the show, Sean. But yeah, it was pretty nice. I got like my nice Dollar Horse gummies, Scandi Fish gummies. Those are important, as along with many a mattress and sheets and other household items that are needed to populate one's apartment.
The full moving experience.
Now,
I'm jealous.
The full moving experience. Just like you. And we did go to the IKEA food court, and like my toast is that I tried their plant-based meatballs that were quite good.
Ooh.
My roast is that I was not given Lincoln berries, which I feel are essential to the meatball mashed potato experience.
No!
I usually have my own jar of lingonberry jam in my fridge at home because I like to make Swedish meatballs like fairly often. That's just a fun fact. And I did a lot of travels in Scandinavia, like my last few years of college. And yeah, I was just really missing out on them lingonberries, but I also felt bad because there was a long line, so I didn't want to like go back and be like, give me my berries.
That's a tough call. It's a tough call.
It's a tough call.
The lingonberries.
I was close to like buying a jar of jam, but then I was like, the line is kind of long. So I just went through it. But I will say, try their plant-based meatballs. They're really good. I really didn't miss a lot. I do think in general, if you're going to go the fake meat route when it's like a minced meat situation, like a burger or a meatball or a sausage, it's usually like you're kind of like, tastes pretty similar. Pretty good. So yeah, it was a good time otherwise.
Couple things on that real fast. Yeah. Sorry. First off, I don't know. I'm so sad for you. Lingonberries is like one of the best parts of IKEA.
Right?
And I still think like about how much joy I got when they like lowered the sugar content of the lingonberry drink that you get at the cafe. It's like perfect now.
Here's another thing.
Yeah.
They do not have the lingonberry drink.
Oh, just
right
at all?
Because
oh, no.
I also was looking for that. There was no fountain beverages possible.
Right, right.
So they only had like La Croix and some stuff. And I will say, like, I mean, like, obviously, we're happy that you can go to IKEA now. No complaints. But as like, you know, a diehard lingonberry fan, I was missing out. And I right. know you can go buy it in the little Swedish market downstairs, but by the time you get that, you are a veteran of the store.
Yes.
You're like, I am not ready. You're either there or you're at the point where you're like, okay, I could not find things in the warehouse, and only a hot dog or cinnamon bun will make me happy.
So for clarification, Just the Facts in the chat asks, was it IKEA takeout?
So yeah, that is Just the Facts. Just so you know, it is IKEA takeaway only.
IKEA takeaway
only. So that is why there's not as many options. Because what I used to do is take the lingonberry drink and mix it with like club soda and make a little bubbly beverage. That was my jam. Nice. Yeah,
it's nice.
It's my favorite. I look forward to that in like Baja Blast. It's like really specific fountain beverages. We get at specific Baja locations.
Yeah, no, seriously. Yep.
Fun times in Swedish furniture land. Daniel, what's your toast and toast and roast for this week?
Ooh, okay. So my toast is actually like in the kind of like Warner, you know, universe right now. I have been watching Succession. And my toast tonight is not Succession, though it is worthy of one. Really enjoying my time with the show. But I sometimes like to, when I'm watching a show, when I kind of catch up on a show, I like to go over and I like to see the online communities and just get a taste, see if they're toxic, see if they're fun, see what's going on over there. And I went to Succession's like subreddit, and it's hilarious because they're following around the location manager and the signs the location manager puts up. His name's Paul. And there's just all of these posts. It's not even one or two. There's like tons of posts from Succession filming season 3 and just the name of like Paul keeping spoilers from them and them just being like, oh, Paul's teasing us. Oh, we can't wait for season 3. And I think it's wonderful. I think that's one of the most like wonderful things that I've seen on an online just like show community. It's a ton of fun. Okay, so my roast this week... I want to know too how people feel about this, but like,
let's hear it.
What's up with the pretzel bun? Like, I love pretzels
in general.
And yeah, in general,
all pretzel buns.
Yeah, in general. Well, in general, like pretzel bun sandwiches and stuff like that. Okay. That's what I'm confused about, because I love pretzels and I had the pretzel world from like a distance, and maybe I have aspirations as like a pretzel connoisseur, and that could be like my one snack that I'm just like, you know, up on, or maybe even like a future pretzel mogul. You know, I've got plans. I'm going to use a pretzel cutter to some use someday. But I just don't know who does the pretzel bun sandwich right. And I just see it. And I remember I saw it before and I'm seeing it now and I feel like I'm going crazy. We're coming out of a pandemic and we're all about pretzel buns again. So I actually looked it up and I found this like article written in 2013 from some publication called the Post Gazette in Pittsburgh. And it was talking about how 2013 was like the year of the pretzel bun.
Yeah.
And, you know, they told the story that I guess like Wendy's introduced it and then it went over to sit down restaurants and it came and went within a year, you know. But now it's back and I want to know who revived it in 2021. Why is it here? And does it take, I love pretzels and I can't stand this around a sandwich.
I somewhat agree. I've gotten like pretzel bread, I feel like from Sprouts or something like that, that has been good for making like a sandwich at home or something, but you don't always have as high hopes when you're making stuff like that. But I will say it does not hold a candle to a real pretzel. And
no.
Like,
no.
You know, some of my heritage is of Bavarian nature. And like my favorite pretzel is just like, it's a pretzel where they stuff it like, I mean, it's kind of like sliced in half and then they cover it in this like chive butter. Like it's, you know, the ratio is lots of chive butter to pretzel,
okay.
But it's absolutely wonderful. But that being said, those pretzels are a bit more like hard on the outside, soft on the inside, opposed to like the American like soft style pretzel. So there's like different ones to have, or there's like the hot dog inside a pretzel situation, which is amazing. But the pretzel bun is not always made to be a pretzel. Mm-hmm. It's kind of just like this. It's almost like when you get like a salt bagel. I feel like it has more of that taste.
Yeah.
And I do like salt bagels, but I don't like so much stuff inside of them. I think that's like the weird part about a pretzel bun, is that you're used to pretzels being a very simple filling. Like you either get like a butter.
Right.
If you get like a sweet one, it has like cinnamon sugar on the outside, or maybe at most a sausage. But like, once you're putting it as a pretzel bun, as a burger, I've had it done well. I wouldn't say across the board, because I think in general, pretzels get like this rap of being easy to make, and they're actually pretty difficult. I think it's one of those where it's like, it's easy to make a pretzel. It's difficult to make a good pretzel.
Absolutely.
So I'm in agreement with you there. And I also like that you have like a slight witch hunt for fast food pretzel buns.
I don't get it.
Yeah. Like that's and also something you can't really like.
Restaurants, and I just don't know. I don't know.
You can't make it quick. You can't make a quick pretzel.
Yeah. I just don't. Yeah. So it's all just a bunch of. I don't know. I got words.
It's incorrect.
I don't get
you
it.
Either
I don't
are
get
a pretzel
it.
Establishment,
right?
Or you're not. You right. know, it's either like there's like a chain called like Bretzel Koenig, which pretty much means Pretzel King, and they very much is like you go in, you're getting a pretzel. You go to Wetzel's, you're getting a pretzel.
I forgot about Wetzel's.
I know. I haven't been to a Wetzel's in a long time. Or an Auntie Anne's. I feel like the last time I went to Auntie Anne's was back when like the Kodak Theater was the Kodak Theater. So it's been a long time. And that after we get off of that hot button issue of pretzels, it is a good segue into our beverage of the evening. Since we are talking about Adult Swim, which is a nighttime activity, we thought we would do a nightcap. So tonight's beverage is a hot toddy. I will admit that I used to call these hottie toddies because I actually thought that was their name.
Hottie toddy. I really.
And I think I said that in front of someone who finally someone corrected me. But before they were just like, well, Tracy, you kind of make these like little bits and stuff. So we just kind of thought that was just like one of your things. Just call hot toddies, hottie toddies. And I was like, no, I was just wrong. I was just very, very wrong. So there's that. I made mine very incorrectly, but it still tastes good. As I am in the process of unboxing, I lacked really main resources for a hot toddy, which is lemon and cloves. So mine is a Suntory whiskey plus a Earl Grey tea plus a splash of elderflower syrup and milk, so that it's kind of like a Earl Grey elderflower latte with a little bit of whiskey in it. And it feels pretty nice. I am not sure if something I should, you know, go start selling at the fair, but it's pretty good for tonight.
It's good.
Daniel, how's your hot toddy treating you?
Ooh, hot toddy. It is. Yeah. I made it a little while before the show, so I'm kind of getting the ingredients kind of one by one. I'm getting the whiskey, I'm getting the lemon, I'm getting the honey.
Yeah,
it's a good drink. It's a good drink.
Yeah, it's good for our like transition from winter to spring. It's a very like medicinal feel without it actually tasting like medicine. So it's good to keep our radio voices nice and hydrated, and it's good to comfort us as we go into a comfort TV programming block that is deep in our hearts, Adult Swim.
Ooh, Adult Swim.
Adult Swim. I guess right off the bat, we should say that Adult Swim is obviously named for like swimming reasons. So, you know how there's like the adults pool, adult swim hour, no kids allowed, hence Adult Swim, which also, I'm not sure if it was a conscious choice, but it aligned pretty well with Safe Hour, which is something in radio where you're allowed to cuss and have less than appropriate content from like 10 p.m. to 6 a.m. And that does seem to be somewhere around where Adult Swim was airing, but they obviously had like an East Coast time as well.
I always made sure to get my college radio show in that period so I could kind of have some
fun. So you didn't have to watch yourself as much?
Yes,
yeah,
exactly.
So I was a 4 a.m. to 6 a.m. gal for a reason.
Yeah, no, it's like, it's a good slot.
It was not bad. So got to see the sunrise, and I could play profanity. Not a bad time. So Adult Swim, what is it? It's a programming block on Cartoon Network that aired late at night. Main creative that is listed and credited is Mike Lazo. It launched September 2nd, 2001, officially. Shows that really have their claim to fame from Adult Swim are Space Ghost Coast to Coast, Aqua Team Hunger Force, C-Lab 2021, Venture Bros, Metalocalypse, The Boondocks, Robot Chicken, Tim and Eric's Awesome Show, Good Job, Rick and Morty, The Eric Andre Show, a thousand more, plus a bunch of content that they purchased. So, Daniel, what is your history with Adult Swim? We're definitely at the right age.
Yeah.
Adult Swim in its prime.
I was, this was fun. I was researching for the show, just these dates and when it started and whatnot. And I realized I was here. I was there for the inception of this thing. I would probably watch this. I mean, obviously, I'm outside the idea of that this is programming for like people over 12 years old that are still up on Cartoon Network. It's like, let's get outside of the target demographic of the channel so we can start having some fun. Granted, yeah, that wasn't... I should have been sound asleep, but I shared my bedroom with like the home office at the time. And yeah. My dad had just installed like this. I had to ask him about this because I always kind of wonder what he did, why the computer was TV at night. And he put in this like thing called the All in Wonder Radeon 8500 ATI graphics card, and that he shared with me today. And I guess I would leave it on and kind of fall asleep to basically like cartoons or whatever. But then we started kind of I guess when Adult Swim kind of came up. Started drifting into this weird kind of time where the shows got a lot more interesting. So I definitely remember like loving Aqua Team Hunger Force, Harvey Birdman, Attorney at Law, Home Movies, which was one of the shows they bought early on to add to their lineup. They were favorites for me falling asleep on the weekends.
Yes.
Adult Swim also was probably my introduction to anime. Like within a year of... This is fun. This is what I mean. This is what I mean where it's like really fun to see all the dates synced up with like childhood memories because they started this Action Saturdays, I think. And they opened it up at 11 p.m. on Saturday with Inuyasha. And it would always follow a repeat of a show I was watching at the time, Transformers Armada, at 10:30 p.m. Little did I know the show was actually airing on Fridays and I was catching a repeat and I was watching the show like way later than I had to. For a series as a kid. But I definitely remembered like staying out, staying up and Adult Swim coming on. And I'd always kind of like negotiate with my parents to at least get the episode of Inuyasha in before inevitably, you know, having to retire from the room for the night. So pretty much after that, at some point, I no longer really had TV in my room, or I would fall asleep to like the iHome or radio or like Grand Theft Auto promotional screensavers or something. And I started watching primetime TV, so I was probably getting my fix. But I definitely like, I think the Futurama era that we'll get to was kind of like the theme that I'd fall asleep to. And then, you know, just kind of like always saw it in the peripheral in the teenage years, but I wasn't. This was kind of around the time that we weren't relying on, our demographic maybe wasn't relying on cable. I wasn't relying on cable. I don't know. And so I was always kind of like looking at a distance, like Adult Swim's doing it. I don't know how to, I don't have this in my room anymore. What about you?
So similarly, I feel like I have been a night owl since, well, existence. So Adult Swim was very good for me. Mm-hmm. It gave me something to watch. I don't know if it was necessarily like, you know, if you think about it, if you watch Cartoon Network and you just like stay on, you know, they like give you a warning that it's adult content. But I don't think I really watched Adult Swim until I was more into my teens. So I don't think it was like a programming oopsie. So I feel like the main thing I watched, though, was anime on Adult Swim. Right. And then also a lot of their things that they purchased from syndication, because that's definitely where I discovered Family Guy was on Adult Swim. And then I also watched I watched Inuyasha for sure. And that was definitely a fond memory of staying up late at night and heating up some instant noodles and popping on Inuyasha. And it was kind of my way of having like the teenage version of a hot toddy, having a hot ramen and watching anime at like 2 a.m, knowing I had to wake up at like 6 a.m.
Big
and just going like, this is how it's going. And
big fun fact here is, did you, so obviously there was a lot of, I guess, anime airing on Toonami at the same time.
Yeah.
And Inuyasha was heading up the Adult Swim block. I actually found someone did this great. This is like the first of the extra reading materials that'll be in the show notes. But there's an article on ToonamiFaithful.com called "Remembering Adult Swim Action Saturdays." The author is Sketch, but Sketch says that it was lucky for Adult Swim Action that Toonami was barred from airing Inuyasha. Because Inuyasha was pinned to a tree by a magic arrow. So you had to stay up late because Toonami thought that that was a bit too much in the pilot.
They thought the arrow was too violent.
They thought the arrow, apparently.
That's what it was. It wasn't like the, oopsie, I found you in the hot spring.
Someone
it was the arrow.
Yeah, it was the arrow. That's why you lost sleep.
It's like a magic arrow, too. It doesn't even do anything. And then it like disintegrates as soon as Kagome comes into it.
What I want to know is that, like, if anybody remembers Toonami, they had a mascot. They had a guy who would talk to you, this CGI guy named Tom. They murdered Tom in, like, this lava. I don't even know what the hell happened. But they murdered Tom on his spaceship, like, right after they did a contest or something like that, and they brought out Tom too. And if they can murder Tom and show his hand falling into the lava, like, well, why can't Inuyasha, the protagonist of his own show, be introduced like pinned to a tree? I don't get it.
Yeah, and temporarily he's pinned to the tree for one episode, and like the fights in Inuyasha are not that bad. Like, I feel like Dragon Ball Z was on Toonami, and it's like,
yeah, that's a good point.
They're getting slammed into oblivion all the time.
Well, in whatever
interesting
case,
censorship.
Yes, and in whatever case, that's exactly like the story of Adult Swim, right? Like, they're there for this stuff that everybody else is in some way at the time rejecting, or something that needs a home. They're becoming this home, whether it's these, you know, the animes that, you know, can't get onto or that are refused from other programming blocks, or, you know, the edgy cartoons, or back catalog of Hanna-Barbera cartoons that they're able to adjust.
Yeah. It does seem like the departure from like the beginning of it, because now I think we're in just this like heyday of people being able to make stuff. And I mean, people who do this for a living could make an argument against it, but like there's a lot of things that now don't have to go through traditional TV network executives, and so a lot more people are getting a lot more stuff on the air, and you're starting to see Adult Swim kind of in a way take a lot of those first steps towards, we don't have to create things for the mainstream demographics that we normally have to do. And if it gets rejected, it's almost saying like, oh, if this can't work for primetime or Toonami or whatever, that means it's kind of perfect for Adult Swim. So it's finding kind of like a match for all this stuff that doesn't fit into that category and giving a place for the things that don't have to target a large group of people. Even though now when you look at it, the target audience for Adult Swim is pretty massive now.
Yeah, but that's now. And that's how things inevitably grow. Like that's what good programming nets you in the long run. But it is kind of like the fact that it wasn't always that way, and it was very much an experiment that had the ability to fail because there was really nothing in its place at the time. They needed to fill it.
Yeah.
And all things considered, I think it was only like 6, maybe 7-ish years prior was like the first time Cartoon Network even had original programming.
Wow.
So it's like pretty early ish in cartoon. I don't really know the relative like age that you can speak of like cable channels and stuff right now in the landscape, but it's, you know, relatively early ish and it's a fun experiment and, you know, it was cheap and it was not a whole lot of, it wasn't this like big initiative that Cartoon Network needed. And so it was able to kind of like form around what those involved wanted it to form around. And it was able to grow organically, I suppose, into now, having that massive audience that you're talking about.
Yeah, it definitely feels like a passion project that was still at the same time funded by a huge network that was doing really well. So, you know, it's like, because we talked about it in a Ranker article by Joseph Langdon that goes through a lot of the timeline for Adult Swim. It's also credited in a few pieces of being like the Cartoon Network's creators and executives volunteered their time to create Adult Swim. But I think we're being a little bit journalistic in caveat of it was also like people who were on the Cartoon Network payroll. So as long as Cartoon Network was doing well, they kind of had enough to like shelve Adult Swim and keep it going. And it did seem to have like pretty quick success. A lot of these things are quite iconic, like Space Ghost Coast to Coast. Yes. And going back to the anime, there's also a lot where unless you were able to get to like a sunset video or a really like or just kind of specific bins at now dearly departed Fry's to find like anime as it's coming out too would be very difficult to do. And so they had Cowboy Bebop, they had Inuyasha, they had a lot of really big shows that I could not, in my research, find a place where they were airing on any other channel.
No, so, I wouldn't know how you would get that awareness otherwise, to be honest.
Yeah.
I mean, this is cable. This is like there's 24 hours to fill 7 days a week, and there's only so many spots, and you have to fill those spots, and you build stuff around that. But yeah, it's very much there's like a time and place for everything.
Other than Fox and The Simpsons, there wasn't a huge market for adult animation. It did seem like Adult Swim wanted to kind of up the ante on adult animation for the American audience because, as they could see from starting to bring in some adult anime, I think that's when people were seeing like there are cartoons made that are not made for children. And we're going to like take it a little further. Like The Simpsons says a lot of stuff that I think could like go over kids' heads, but it's never like really too crass or crude. Like it's not like in your face like that. Whereas a lot of cartoons that are more risque would end up on Adult Swim because it wouldn't matter if they were violent or had cussing or, you know, space cowboys who played jazz. They could have all of that. And there was a lot of the shows that were on Adult Swim, it did seem like a good show to watch later at night. Like, I like things to fill an ambiance. And so I do feel like you could have your nightcap and you could put it on TV later at night and you would get that feeling of, this is a 1 a.m. show.
Right.
So in a way, they were finding like a really good match for the content. But it's not to say, like, I think with traditional primetime, there's almost like a taboo or almost a diss if you're like outside of 9 p.m. But I would say like Adult Swim recreated its own timeline for Night Owls, where it's like it's not a diss to be airing at 12:30. In fact, you're in like a nice smack dot of our program block. So going more into the history, though, it is, like, I feel like a lot of the things Adult Swim did was paving the way for animation that's less filtered. It actually says in this Ranker article that they found mature anime in America with the broadcast of their first anime series, Cowboy Bebop. So that was the first, according to Ranker, and the show was aired uncensored with a few Japanese references changed. a revolutionary decision at the time, and a point that off the air we've discussed a lot are anime shows that are adapted differently for their dub versus sub. So it's interesting to see that for Adult Swim, they started to make those tweaks a little bit less. And yeah, before then, it was widely believed that American audience wouldn't feel comfortable with unfamiliar culture markers on television or mature cartoon entertainment in general. And I think that is where you're seeing a turning point, is allowing, like, Adult Swim is definitely for people who are had a little bit more of an, I wouldn't say like an open mindset, but they were kind of ready for something different. They didn't need to be spoon-fed content, and it didn't need to be relatable. And in fact, it was good if it wasn't, because I think that's something you'd see a lot in primetime television. It's a lot of shows that take place in apartments, in living rooms.
Workplace dramas,
Yeah, it's a lot of like familiar settings with familiar people doing everyday things that have quirks and comedy to it, because so does life. But Adult Swim, if you look at a lot of the programming, it's a lot of shows that do not imitate life in a great way. Like, I mean, Aqua Teen Hunger Force is kind of like, okay, what if all of your fast food trash came to life and had their own little experiences in their own sitcom? Or, you know, Space Ghost Coast to Coast is funny because they take a character and they are like, what if we made him a late night talk show host that's kind of like a spoof on all of the actual late night TV shows, and then have all of his guests and stuff kind of spin off into their own TV series. And then you have like Inuyasha, which is taking this like concept of like demons and modern day time and having all of these, like, they call it like a feudal fairy tale experience. So you're taking a lot of really traditional ancient Japanese history plus modern day Tokyo and blending it together. And it's a really cool show, but that's also like not what you see typically on, you know, a lot of sitcoms. I would say like now is a different time, because we're in this age of streaming platforms and people really trying to be like, what can I do to make my show different and get a little bit more out there? And I think Adult Swim in a way was kind of being a pioneer in that, of like, we're going to really focus on the outliers and the outcast target audience.
Yeah.
And build some programming that's for them. And also kind of like, it makes me jealous, because I feel like I can be like this, where, you know, when you're like doing stuff in a creative job, and you're just like, I just want to do it this way, but I have to like jump through all the hoops and like do it a certain way. A lot of times, like, make, you know, compromises, because you're like, at the end of the day, got to do this for the job. But it does seem like a lot of Adult Swim was like, they were able to green light things that they were like, I don't care how many people watches this. Like, I like this. I'm putting it on.
Yeah.
And, but like, it's also like high quality shows. It's interesting because they're like low budget in a lot of ways. That comes up a lot when you look at how people characterize Adult Swim. It's like a lot of low budget, kind of risky content. But at the same time, if you look at all the animation, and if you look at other shows that would normally fit this bill, like South Park went to Comedy Central, but that's a show where like they kind of prize themselves on being like, the animation is not necessarily the highest quality animation you could have. It's a lot more about the storytelling, and having them kind of in this specific style is branded to the creators. But if you look at a lot of the Adult Swim animation, it's pretty top notch.
Yeah.
And it keeps getting better. And yeah, that's kind of how I see Adult Swim redefining its own kind of grasp on primetime and introducing shows and making them a part of like our animation lexicon.
Cool.
And yeah, just getting liberated from ratings and, you know, taking things that could, you know, they had low stakes in this time zone that they had, so they were able to take more risks to introduce new concepts. And that's all we see happening now in the streaming world of prestige television. So
that's true. That's kind of like Netflix's whole MO of recent years, was not to not to develop content based around everybody, but find each individual niche. It's fun to see Adult Swim have so much success doing this. To the point, actually, this is kind of fun, like how it almost redefines primetime as it extends it in a weird, different kind of way. Just really becomes like the must watch of its hour. Cause like at that point, I don't know, I remember being up as a teenager. It's like you're either watching infomercials or you're watching like a repeat of From Russia with Love. And if you have Adult Swim, you have like the infomercial parodies, you know, on Adult Swim. And they do actually start doing live action content. And I honestly believe a lot of this is really interesting. This is a fun fact that I had to check right before the episode. Is that apparently in 2005, Turner Broadcasting split Adult Swim from Cartoon Network so Nielsen Media Research could treat it as a separate channel for like ratings purposes and stuff like that. And it's actually the same thing that I didn't realize this either. Nick at Night is that they share a channel space with Nickelodeon, but since 1996, they're not technically Nickelodeon.
Wow.
And so I don't know that opened up Adult Swim to be more live action. But they did start getting a lot of live action shows around the late thousands. There was Children's Hospital. There was the, what was that great? Like, the Rob Corddry stuff, the infomercial stuff, Tom Goes to the Mayor, which became the Tim and Eric stuff. Also something like kind of to note here with like how Adult Swim used their space in interesting ways is that they didn't adhere to the hour or 30 minute broadcast blocks. There were a lot of like 15-minute kind of episodes.
Yeah.
That's really fun. That's cutting edge for the time.
They broke a lot of rules because wasn't Robot Chicken like 20, 22 minutes, maybe even less?
Maybe, yeah. I haven't seen Robot Chicken in many, many years, but I do believe it was one of those ones that was shorter. Yeah. And there was all sorts of stuff. They're fun bumpers. Also, like kind of redefining primetime in a way is that they were early in the digital space. There's a great quote in an LA Times article, and it kind of describes exactly kind of like the next or the side kind of the ventures of Adult Swim, for lack of a better word. Scott Collins calls it, or he sort of coined that Adult Swim's dorm room type nonsense fits the digital age, which
I love it.
You can't really, I don't know. It's a great way to say that. And it's great because it also includes their kind of stint as a record label. They like split off William Street Productions into like William Street Records. I have the name somewhere in here. And they'd start releasing albums on it. I recall kind of during the
team. You got it right, William Street's Records.
Nice. I definitely recall seeing those, and I remember it was really cool when they'd start kind of giving out free music. And they did that because they weren't profitable as a record company because no one was in the MP3 era and, you know, mid-thousands.
No one is.
Yeah, but they ended up like being able to do community outreach and being able to sort of like promote and partnership with artists, and that's why we have Flying Lotus. Like, that's awesome. That's big.
I love
that's
Flying
massive.
Lotus.
And
so cool.
Yeah, they were just like, between that, between the records, and like, they were a programming block. They like got into apps and they did video games. I remember going to GameStop as a teenager and trying to find the Aqua Teen Hunger Force game because it came with like unreleased episodes.
Fun.
And for like physical media lovers of like the 2009, I guess before even streaming was around, this is a really cool thing that does not exist anymore because the storefront does not exist anymore. But they had a section of their shop apparently that was like a build your own DVD section where could choose episodes of different shows. You could choose the menu screens. You could choose all sorts of stuff and you could build yourself out a little like Adult Swim's greatest hits for yourself. And so it's all just, it's a bunch of stuff that is both audience and creator sort of focused and interactive that it doesn't need to be, but you can see where the love and you can see where kind of the recognition of, you know, it's, I forget which article I read this in, but I read a quote also today and it said like, you know, within the first few minutes, if you're in or you're out, but you know, like what Adult Swim is.
Yes.
And these are all the things that it is. Yeah.
I feel like Adult Swim was opening a lot of doors at this time. And I think you hit on a really great note that you're seeing a programming block that is more audience and viewer focused than it is ratings focused. And so you're not seeing them pivot or seeing shows end prematurely. You're, for the most part, I mean, there's always an excuse to that or an exception to that. But I think that's what is really edgy and also memorable on Adult Swim. They're really getting outside of the box on that. But it is still a network programming block that comes with its varied
right, yeah. No, yeah. Like the one thing is that it's like not, I don't know, it's not super like, wasn't, it is inclusive, obviously, for creators, but there's always this thing that you have to mention with Adult Swim during the time, because there's this really awful quote that Lazo was actually taken back, where he kind of talks about how, because he was questioned on why, like, Adult Swim, the writers' rooms and, like, the amount of women's writers versus, like, men's writers is, like, really... Did you read about this week? This was really interesting.
I did not.
Oh,
so
really?
Please do tell for me.
Okay. This is not the stuff that, like, Mike Lazo came out and he said, like, he just said a really dumb quote that's a really dumb way to think about, like, you know, women and conflict and comedy, and he's taking it back. And really, the reason that this is even a point of conversation is because when brought up in an interview, like, they kind of doubled down on it. So it makes it seem, like, deliberate, and it makes it seem... like it's just part of the story at that point, you know, like you can't, but
like I could kind of see that with, in a way, when you look at the content, like you'll see the credits and you'll usually see that. I would say like the exception is probably some of the shows that they imported from, like either some of the anime or some of the other shows that are syndicated might have come from more diverse writers' rooms, but it does
seem
like a lot
and
of
like original
the Adult Swim original
yeah.
programming seems very much like, I never really have heard interviews when I think about show creators from Adult Swim that are women. It's always usually men, which is interesting. Like, I think, you know, in the past, you might have thought like, well, it's a lot of like gross out comedy, but I feel like that's all been kind of like the glass ceiling on that has been broken too. When you think about Broad City and other shows where it's like, you can show that a totally female writer and produced show can also do gross out comedy. That's hilarious.
Oh yeah.
So
yeah.
I think it was definitely a different time in television and in comedy where it was less of a inclusive and diverse space.
Yeah.
Diverse.
I mean, yeah. It's just funny because it's like, there's so much. Yeah. Yeah. No, totally. It's like a distinctive aspect of Adult Swim. And you know, as much as it is creator focused, it's kind of like that one, like this happened, you know, and then,
I mean,
then this was something
we couldn't
that was
talk about this yeah. whole history of this show without mentioning, like, you know, nothing is perfect.
Yeah,
and
of course.
A lot of comedy was very male dominated until recent years. So it's not really surprising, I think, if you follow a lot of people's careers and journeys, because I've always followed like stand up since I was in middle school, which is interesting. But I think, like, you know, seeing even that, like the gender ratios go from being like, I could name three top female stand-ups to now there's so many to where you're just like, everyone's just a stand-up comedian. You don't really even need to mention,
oh yeah, that's,
you know,
interesting,
male versus female, because there's so many
yeah.
really successful comedians out there of all shapes and sizes. But back in the early 2000s, not the case.
Right. Yeah.
So.
Hey, we just got a chat question, by the way. This is kind of switching gears.
Yeah.
Just the Facts asks, what was your favorite Adult Swim show that went mainstream? You have one?
Ooh, you go first. I have to think about this a little bit.
Ooh, okay. Are we talking just a... this is...
I know.
This is interesting. Also, okay, I want to tackle this question first. We're going to do things a little out of order because we got another question. Thinking of niche networks, MTV doesn't play that many music videos anymore, and TLC is all crazy reality shows now. Do you feel like Adult Swim stayed Adult Swim? I think like the ultimate great thing taking away, and this is kind of like the... this is why you have to caveat with like a... you can't... you know, you have to discuss like how to look at something in its fullness because there's so much to compliment here. And one of these things that is like, yeah, Adult Swim is maintained itself, and it's maintained its convictions. And that's something that in every interview, every creator is really proud of. And that's something that new creators are able to kind of bring their stuff to Adult Swim still. Eric Andre has said that his, like, one of his influences is Space Ghost. And, you know, Flying Lotus, like, came to Adult Swim because he loved watching Adult Swim as a kid, or as a teen. And so, yes, like the fact that this show is still a place that creators kind of grow up aspiring to go to, and then they end up there, and then they, and it's all like, it is still itself. So I would say yes. I would say that Adult Swim has stayed Adult Swim. And I remember thinking today about MTV and being like, oh no, Adult Swim is kept itself, and kept its convictions. Okay. Did you have any thoughts on that, or do you want to tackle that mainstream question?
I feel like, all right, favorite Adult Swim show that's gone mainstream, probably the Eric Andre show. I feel like that has gone mainstream.
Oh, that counts. Oh yeah. Okay. Oh, I can't. Okay.
I was
dang,
thinking,
you
was
said
like,
it first.
Does this count?
That's tough.
But like, I'm like, I feel like enough people.
That's
like,
tough.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that counts. Because I also loved Aqua Teen Hunger Force, but I don't know if that like ever really got fully mainstream.
Right. It's like the question, right? Aqua Teen Hunger Force is, you know, like home movies obviously stayed kind of like a cult show, I'm assuming.
Squidbillies.
Squidbillies, yeah.
So many
let
shows.
Let me go up here. Let's find this out. Ooh.
I mean, like,
I would say Eric Andre. I would say, does Boondocks count as mainstream? That was something
I feel like it counts.
I probably obviously didn't understand it fully when it was airing and I was a child, but I did know.
We understand it more now.
Yes. And yeah. But I did know that I like had to watch it.
Yeah, it was really good.
Right. It's interesting because like what are the mainstream shows? I personally, the only time I've ever seen Rick and Morty is when staying on Friends 4s in college, and it was just something
really
put on at the end of the night. I have not actually really dived into it as a series. I'm relatively unfamiliar with it, but, you know.
I really enjoy Rick and Morty. I don't feel like I love it as much as other people love it.
Yeah.
If that's a weird thing to say. Like, I really enjoy the show, and I had, like, it was kind of fun because the one time... long time ago, like maybe 5 years ago, I went to like Upright Citizens Brigade in, I want to say, the Chelsea area, and the show creator was there doing improv, and then like, you know, a year later Rick and Morty came out and I was kind of like, oh, that's fun. But and that kind of like made me go like, oh, I should watch that because he made that show, because he made Community as well, right?
Yeah, it's a Dan Harmon show. Yeah,
that's what I thought. So, yeah, and he was cool. So I was like, I'm into it, and I would follow the Pickle Rick van for Comic-Con when I worked in downtown San Diego, okay, and would like take pictures of the inflatable Rick down there too. Like, it was very fun working near the convention center and seeing the height of Rick and Morty, and then a lot of the breweries down here made different beers. I know, like, I tried to find it for our show tonight, but it just, like, the stars didn't align. But I knew McKellar made a beer that was called, like, Rick and Murky.
Yeah.
It's like a brown ale. And, like, a lot of other, like, Pickle Rick type beverages. And friend of the show and boyfriend Sean loves Rick and Morty a lot. So we would always watch them as soon as they could come on.
Nice.
And it's always like, why is there so much time between seasons? But it's like, it's animation and good stuff takes time.
Yes.
So that is a good one. I also wonder about like shows like Family Guy that got revived via Adult Swim. Like, does that count? Because that would definitely be the most mainstream.
Oh, so that's the question, right? Like, are we talking?
Yeah.
Yeah. Are we talking original Adult Swim programming? In which case, yeah, it's Eric Andre's show. Are we talking Adult Swim programming, like the stuff that they've syndicated or bought in some way that happened to make it to the mainstream because of them, like Futurama or Family Guy, I guess.
Oh, yeah, Futurama's so good.
Or, yeah, this is interesting. I mean, it's a big distinction. And like, do we count like you said, like it was an avenue for animes. There's a couple mainstream animes that have come out of Adult Swim that you weren't getting anywhere else. I guess we wouldn't count those.
I guess that doesn't count because that's kind of the platform they were given to air here. But it's fun to see because a lot of those shows are kind of having a revival now, either because they're having continuations, like in the case of Inuyasha, their sequel series is now. That's Yasahime, and that is kind of like the children generation doing their own adventure. And then at the same time, Cowboy Bebop, I think, is in production, or I think maybe you said they just wrapped up filming a live-action show for Netflix.
We're getting live-action Cowboy Bebop pretty soon.
That is a show we will have to cover and do a compare and contrast because...
Interesting, yeah. I don't think I've ever finished the original Cowboy Bebop anime. I have the movie, which I don't believe I've seen either. I don't know why I didn't finish this. I've also not finished...
There's not too many episodes. We could do this.
Another... Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Another, you know, anime that's still going that Adult Swim did air is Evangelion. That just had, like, something new. I think a new movie this last year. So, yeah, it's interesting. Yeah, a lot of revivals from the heyday of... Sorry.
Oh, yeah.
This is a good comment. I do remember this happening. Samurai Jack returned for a final season on Adult Swim. So a bit like going from mainstream to cult. That's interesting. Yeah, BMAC. All right. That's true. I wish... It's interesting. Samurai Jack was a great Cartoon Network show. And it did come back, I want to say, 2 years ago. For that fifth and final season, maybe? I don't know the number
on
that.
I want to say you're right there on the fifth season, because I think as soon as I got Hulu, they had Samurai Jack on there, and I remember thinking, like, the animation on that show was really different from the rest, and that's what got me hooked on that show first. And then it is a really strong plot, and that creator has made, like, a similar show just recently that I want to say is on HBO Max that is like there's like no dialogue and it's about like caveman kind of era.
Really?
But I know I should live fact check that, but it's interesting to make that distinction of Samurai Jack was definitely a show that was cult followed and yet on Toonami, and then when they wanted to resurrect it, it's like, well, where does it go? Adult Swim.
Yeah. You know, Samurai Jack, this is not about Adult Swim anymore. Samurai Jack's one of those Cartoon Network shows. There's like, I remember one scene of like each of the great Cartoon Network shows, and Samurai Jack always had this scene, or had a scene once, and it was like Jack, like, he was basically in a conversation speaking about the differences between poor and unfortunate. And it was such like a striking scene. I know, it's so random. It's such a striking scene, and it's so like to its... credit of you know, just being something that is memorable, striking, and you know, I'm trying to look up actually like what the Samurai Jack creator
I'm
that's right, he did
it.
That Clone Wars series that aired
right now
for like
he
5
made
minutes
the right Hotel before. Transylvania.
Did he really?
Yes, he's the director for that.
Wow, that's
isn't that interesting?
Yeah, that's very interesting. I am unfamiliar with Hotel Trans. I know what it is. I feel like this is one of those creators that I need to kind of just like look around, poke around their work and see what they're about and kind of, you know, find the similarities.
Oh, and he made Primal. That's the show I was thinking of. That
Primal.
Is about like dinosaur era show. Yeah. And then, oh, and he has some credit to Dexter's Laboratory as well. Oh, he was the creator. Wow.
Yeah. Also, fun fact. He was creator of Dexter. I believe, let me fact check this for us. I believe that Mike Lazzo was the creator for Powerpuff Girls, actually, which is kind of fun, too. So the person who created Adult Swim and went out and risked it all for Adult Swim was the creator of Powerpuff Girls. It's kind of fun.
You know what? I'm really into that because I love Powerpuff Girls, which, you know, that was definitely the most anime-like show that was created on Cartoon Network, because it's like, you know, kind of has that same magical girl concept, and then they fight crime.
Very much, when thinking about Powerpuff Girls and everything about it, I see the version of it that could have aired on Adult Swim.
I
mean, obviously, there's probably, you know, any of these could have aired on Adult Swim without changing, but this is something that it's like I definitely see the similarities here. See the shared space within Lazo's head.
You can kind of see a lot of those shows holding back, where on Adult Swim, they would just be like more unfiltered and extended.
Yeah, totally. Totally. Any further thoughts on Adult Swim?
I mean, this is a real cherished place, I want to say. An ending thought is like, how long will Adult Swim last with a lot of the new streaming networks taking a lot of the content that I think would normally have gone to Adult Swim? Like, will they kind of keep enough of these big shows and create more stuff to keep going? Or are they going to get a little bit more competition for these cult followed shows?
Yeah. Do you see... Yeah, I mean, the whole thing about Adult Swim is that there's so much, like, imagery attached to it, and there's so much, like, interactivity and whatnot, and it feels like a place, you know? It feels almost like if a channel were your kind of favorite dive or theater, you know, local theater in a way. I don't know.
Like the dive bar of cartoons.
Something, yeah, in the beginning, for sure.
Like but, lovable stuff.
Right, like it's an establishment, right? Like it's a place that you go for something. And this is interesting, as all of these get folded into larger services, like do we see interfaces allow for those kind of places, those hubs in fun ways that continue to allow Adult Swim to be its thing?
Because in a way, there is now, if you subscribe to HBO Max, a full Adult Swim hub on HBO Max.
That's fun.
So that is, in a way, kind of like, we're going to still keep our place within the streaming services. But it's also of them going to a premium cable platform that is known for having uncensored content.
Right, yeah. Yeah, but does that allow Adult Swim to do like the crazy interstitials or bumpers? Does that allow for like, I was reading that they do April Fool's kind of jokes, and sometimes they'll like air the new movie picture in picture at the bottom of like you would see on a video chat, like that size across other programming when it's slated to air, and, you know, draw mustaches on cartoon characters. I read all these April Fool's pranks that they would do. It just seems interesting. I suppose you could get that. You just swap the file. Like, you know, a bunch of people, I guess, this year tried to watch Tom and Jerry and got the first hour and a half of Justice League or something. But yeah, so I don't know. It depends.
It's
but I don't know.
Kind of
it's
like, will they lose the dorm room feel?
Nice.
And get more buttoned up?
Maybe.
Is that what we're going to see? Like, maybe the longevity part is not the part to argue, but to just the facts point, will it be a show and a programming block that's able to hold on to its roots and its identity, or is it going to evolve in the way that MTV has gone through a few rounds?
Yeah, I don't know.
We're gonna have to wait and see.
That's what we'll wait and see. We'll wait and see how the larger kind of interfaces play it. But yeah, I don't know. As far as it goes, it's really cool. It's a really, really great programming block to look at. And it always kind of reminds me of like studying brands in college and like, you know, like thinking about how cool like brands can be when they're true to themselves. And this is this is one of those ones. It's like just really built something cool out of itself.
Showing that being genuine can get you far.
Well said. Well said. If nothing else, that's it.
Nope.
For this week's Prime Time Party Time. Catch us back here next Monday night, ptptshow.com at 9 p.m. The show could not have been made without the amazing following people. Our artwork was done by Fen. Find her at FenLante on Instagram. Our theme song was done by Jay Wright. Find him at jwrightmusic.com. Website, thanks to Coco. Thank you for BMAC for helping us put this episode together. Thank you for the great questions, just the facts. I got nothing else here on Adult Swim, but this was episode 13, and we'll see you for episode 14 next Monday, March, March 29th, March 29th.
Rounding out March, keep on swimming.
Can we just let the guitar play? We never let the guitar play.
We should let it be heard.
Well, it's over now. Here's the part everybody's waiting for. So I was kind of absent during that hot toddy segment because our stream went down very briefly. We were back. Obviously,
okay.
We were back.
If great it was going to go out anytime, the hot toddy segment is where it should. Describing the drinks is not as crucial as the rest of the show.